Welcome to Philly Coco Presents Side Project Spotlight, Episode 63. This is a developer's journey to making cool stuff. I'm Kotaro.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Aaron.
And we are Philly Coco, a Philadelphia-based Cocoaheads community focused on Apple development that primarily, but not exclusively, means iOS, Mac, tvOS, watchOS, and visionOS development. Philly Coco's true desire is to take you higher on your own developer journey.
Ooh, good job.
Just a little slippery,
that,
but
that
fine.
List of platforms just continues to grow from Apple.
You know, I keep thinking like I should like condense that somehow, but I mean, what can I say? Like this primarily means, but not exclusively means, all of Apple's native development platforms.
Yeah. I mean, pretty soon is Apple just going to someday be like, you know what? We also can also publish to the web. It'll automatically make a progressive web app for the Android folks or something.
Oh, yeah, we could do that. I mean, there was like a tweet or something. I don't know if it was on Mastodon or a post, I should say, on Mastodon or on Twitter, but it was like an April Fool's joke where they were like SwiftUI framework is now true cross-platform and you can develop for the web and Android. And I was kind of thinking like, oh, that would be awesome. And then I realized, oh, wait a minute. I just remember what day it is.
Yeah. You know, however, isn't that Ignite, that static web website framework from Paul Hudson? Ignite? Is it called Ignite or something like that? But it is like a Swift UI style way of doing a website.
Okay.
If you haven't seen it. It's like
I've not seen it.
Well, yeah, he did the shaders at stuff, right? The particle effects stuff, and then there's like the third thing he's done recently, and it's a static website builder like Hugo, but it's done in Swift and you write it, and it's very similar syntax to Swift UI.
Okay,
so
let's check that out.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes to that.
Is that how new is that?
Very new. It's like it came out a little while ago, maybe weeks.
Because he had another static website thing in Swift before this, right?
Yes, there was. There was a, who was that one?
Called like Publish or something like that.
So it's like, yeah, Hugo in the sense of how you build it in, but you would do it in Swift versus, I forgot what the language was for Hugo.
Publish was John Sundell's static site generator.
That was John Sundell, not.
And then I think this one is called Ignite. Ignite from Paul Hudson is the newest one.
I just saw recently there was a YouTube video talking about the weirdest inversion I've heard about having React Native using Skia. So basically React Native, instead of using native components, like when it does the sort of JavaScript bridge, instead of that, they use the Skia engine that you would see it with Flutter using,
okay,
to render the UI, but they use Skia to, you know, so instead of React Native doing like a bridge to basically build a native app, they use the rendering engine of the Skia rendering engine to actually generate the UI. And what that allows for that is to basically get the type of Flutter animations, which I didn't realize that was an issue for React Native, to get similar like Swift UI, UI transitions and effects and blend modes and that kind of stuff. But with Flutter, you can kind of get that in a similar fashion and get the sort of UI transitions and animations. But that was, a lot of it was driven by the Skia engine itself.
Yeah, we were talking to someone, Aaron, at the Side Project Saturday, Coulter and I, to a new member of Philly Coca. Comes to the Slack. I don't know if he joined the Slack yet, but he was new to the group, and he's a big Flutter guy. And so we're talking about Flutter, and after that, I started doing some more research again. I'm like, what's the current state of Flutter? Has it been a while? I found like an old article somewhere talking about, or was like a podcast or YouTube something, and it was they were talking about Flutter. Is like Flutter gonna, like, you know, be like the one way of making all apps? And like, is native apps gonna go away? And I was like, And it was from years ago. It was from a few years ago. And apparently not. So apparently we're still okay. Native app's still a thing. But I mean, there's so many like websites that compare the two.
Yeah, there's definitely like a war. And it's
which
kind
is
of
weird
bizarre
because it's not.
Because
it's
almost like native in a weird way is like an afterthought to the React Native and the Flutter groups. There's like a contingency of like Flutter and React that they sort of have their own internal battle, right? Like they sort of like push native designs like, oh, we don't care about you. Because once you're in this particular space, native is not a thing in that world, like especially for people who commit to those platforms, right? And then so now the question is like, which is better, right? Whereas Flutter has a lot of the app size, because you have to bring the rendering engine along for the ride, that's huge.
Yeah, I mean, it's a business decision. It's not a holy war. Like, you know, well, like there's advantages to all of these things, and you know, disadvantages. The best possible app, performance wise, best like having immediate access to the APIs from the vendor providing, being able to like make I would say the best version of an app on the platform would be the native tools. Mm-hmm. And then you do make, even with Flutter, you're going to make certain compromises to use a cross-platform thing. And you make probably even more on the React Native side. But, you know, it's like...
kind of funny because like...
not everybody needs to have the most polished, perfect, high-performance app. You know, make more sense to have a shared code base or something like that.
It's hard to do if you're trying to make a consistent app. And I think that's sort of the trappings of cross-platform development, is that you're more likely to make a crappy app on two platforms than a nice, well-crafted one on maybe one or the other, right?
And yeah, I mean,
it's just time and resource.
Yeah, I mean, if you do, I mean, I would say that doing native is... in my view, the preferable way if you want the best user experience and you have the capabilities to do that. But,
I don't know.
I also depends. The developer experience is also different, too. So it's like you can learn and you can develop things on whatever platform, but they're not all equally pleasant for the developer. So, and that can somewhat depend also on the developer's tastes or, you know, as well, on what kind of app you're working on. So there's so many factors. That's why I say it's mostly a business decision. Unless you're an independent person or you're doing a side project, which we'll talk about a little more today in the main topic, it's like the choice of these is kind of not even up to you per se. It's kind of like whatever this makes sense for the business, when you're working on it. And they're all good. They're all great. You can make great stuff with React Native, Flutter, and of course with Swift UI and UIKit and all that stuff today.
What I understand about some of the modern architectural changes that they've been recently making with React Native, or React in general, that sort of the original issues that people had with React and by extension React Native is something that is going to be litigated with these changes.
Okay.
The other thing that's interesting is like Flutter actually had some kind of issues where like it I guess it was a known issue in the Flutter world where like they said like the startup time would be like really
would hang slow
for a significant amount of time before it like sets in and kicks in. It's like it's a known Flutter thing. And so that's partially why they moved to Impella, because Skia is, I believe, just strictly an OpenGL framework. Or strictly uses OpenGL
so much engineering effort to avoid using the native tooling. That's the way I always see it.
I get it. It's about control. In the end of the day, it really is just about control.
And again, that control, I mean, which kind of trade-offs you choose depend on your business situation, you know?
Yep.
Totally makes sense to do Flutter a lot of the time, React Native or Native Flutter, or any other number of things, too.
Because, like, the React people, if you have a lot of people who are in the company that does React, then that's part
of your business decision. Yeah. Like, you know, what skill sets we have? Like, I mean, I think we've talked about this stuff before. Maybe we'll do a whole episode again about this with, like, the current state of things. Sure. But there's no, like, wrong answer or right answer for what tooling you use. It's, at the end of the day, it matters more what your product is and what makes sense.
There's only a right answer for you.
Yeah, well, yeah, and for your
until
situation.
You find out it's the wrong answer, and then you redo it again.
Exactly. And if you're working independently,
every 5 years,
right? And if you're like independent, then you can just play with whatever is interesting to you. And,
yeah, whatever fits your boat.
But yeah. Most of the time, it's not even up to you anyway. It's like you're gonna come into the company, and they're gonna be like, "Well, this is what we're doing for this app," and someone else has chosen the tooling, and then you're like, "Okay,
how did we get off this tangent?"
I don't know. I was trying to get us back onto the main topic, because but we had a little bit more news to get to before we get to the main topic.
Yes, we did, and the news is WWDC 2024 has just been announced for June 10th to the 14th. It's going to be amazing. Although I don't know exactly if it's going to be that much different from last year. I don't presume it would be.
What do you mean different? Like the format?
Yeah, the format, which is basically you get a ticket to go to the Cupertino headquarters and then watch it on the TV screen in the middle of...
Yeah. No, it looks like the format is the same as last year, but the invitation obviously hints at AI being a big part of
iOS. You excited, Aaron? You excited?
Yeah, I'm interested to see what they do.
Yeah.
Without getting too far in the weeds, because we have a whole episode dedicated for that. What is the one hot take you guys are anticipating for this one? You can go ahead, Aaron. You first.
Everything on device, so we'll see how much they can accomplish doing that.
So all the models or nothing that will be cloud based.
Yeah, I'm not sure how they're going to handle old hardware. They're just going to just say it's not supported on old hardware. If they're going to do anything in the cloud, seems like not Apple style to do these giant cloud based models that use tons of other people's data.
Yeah,
I don't know. We'll see.
I think they'll probably do a mixture, but I'm really curious to what they'll do on device, to what extent they can get away with on device. But what I want them to fix is Siri. Like, I just want Siri to work a little bit.
Siri is dead.
Either kill Siri or replace Siri with something that works. I don't care what the technology is. I just want it to be... Look, when I'm using my Apple TV here and I ask the dingus, to search for something, for instance, I'm like, dingus, search YouTube, and I give it a phrase. Like, half the time it gets deeply confused. It starts searching the app store for the app YouTube, or it doesn't like my choice of language, and it says it's like insulted or something. And sometimes it won't even open the app up. It won't know which app I'm asking it to do. Sometimes it's obviously just reading keywords and not in any particular order.
The worst is when it doesn't say anything.
It doesn't say anything. Yeah, it'll just stop, not work at all.
Not respond.
And so you're like, the one thing they did fix is that timers do seem to be work more consistently now than they used to. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But I can't rely on it for any kind of voice interface of significance. So that means Apple TV is really more painful to use than it should be, because the voice interface is supposed to be the convenient way you interact with a lot of the apps, like for searching, especially. It just doesn't work
funny
reliably.
Thing.
It never understands what I'm saying.
My rudimentary experience with Vision Pro using Siri, dingus.
Sorry, guys. It is
surprisingly good. Like, in many ways, a lot of your interactions will be via dingus.
Maybe it just works better on Vision OS.
You just say open this app or open that, like, because you're doing a lot of rudimentary stuff when you're trying to open here, close all my apps, and it's relatively straightforward. Like, anything relatively straightforward, it'll do.
That's like OS level stuff. You're not trying to interact with other apps, which is, I think, where the problem is right now.
Yeah, that's where the problem is whenever I try to, and whenever I'm asking it to like take what I'm saying verbatim and stick it in a search box, that's where it completely falls over flat, where it'll misinterpret my words often.
Yeah, I guess one of the things that makes it tough is, like, a lot of, especially the interaction components, is dependent on the application developers
yeah.
adding like hooks, you know, like intents to like say, hey, or the shortcut intents to like hook into so that it provides a way to like interact with it better.
The intents from messing around with it a bit, the intents framework and the thing that was supposed to replace it, the app intents, they're still very limited in what they can do. So you pretty much have to say the thing exactly at what how the developer designed it. And if you don't say the command exactly correctly with the name of the app in the right order, it just doesn't work.
But I'm curious to see what other things they'll integrate in there. Like, are they going to bring in that thing that the Samsungs have? You can like circle stuff and it'll do like an image search and give you back info, like that kind of thing. And like, I mean, there's just a lot of ideas. And of course, I want Xcode to have some better generation and like and stuff in there. So
if there's anything I think is after having experience doing Flutter in Android Studio for, you know, approximately 2 months, and having that experience of like, oh, this is what really good code completion looks like.
Yeah, I want code completion
in Xcode. Yeah,
code completion can be painful, especially around Swift UI stuff where it'll just like spit out. You know what I mean? Where you try to write something like, I want to write a V stack and I want to add spacing, but then it just auto completes the entire, you know, signature, and then you have to like deleting a bunch of stuff. You're like, what are you doing? Like, I just want better code completion. That would make my life better.
And I'm sure there's a way to do it, but like that requires like a convoluted key command combo.
I can't figure out what tab space. I've tried everything. Like, stop. I don't know.
Just anticipate what I want to.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. And
like figure out my coding patterns so you know to do code completions that would make sense for me.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I'm excited for all that kind of stuff. We'll see. But it is pretty clear. They capitalized what word? What, I don't know the word. There were two words at an A and an I, and I don't know what they were. But they capitalized an A and an I.
Amazingly insane. I don't know.
Amazingly insane.
This is like two typical Apple lines. I'm sure. I know Greg Joswiak had the line, but amazing was the first word, but then amazingly, it has to be insane. I can't. Amazingly, insanely great. I had something. Oh, that's
amazingly, insanely great. I don't.
Or you could say an amazingly great insanity, and then you can get AGI.
Let me look.
That'd be a nice hook.
Apple announces it. Oh, nobody has just the ad. Like, nobody just has the ad on the news site. Oh man.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
Who knows? It's there was something in one of the ads that that where people were claiming said AI in it. Anyway, it's clear it's gonna be AI. And so it's gonna be exciting.
So I have a question, and maybe a transitional question, but what do you think they're going to do for the Vision Pro? Is it going to be like a 1.5 release, or are they going to actually do like Vision OS 2.0?
Vision Pro is obsolete. Time to spend another $4,000.
I'm sorry, guys. Vision Pro 2.0.
Thankfully, we didn't spend that money.
Vision Pro 2 announced a dub this year. I doubt it. I think they'll do Vision Pro. I think I'll call it a 2.0 update, a Vision OS 2.0 update, just because of branding. Because
I feel like there's so many things that they left hanging, right? So, like, there was no way to reorder any of the app icons. So, that's one. The regular app icons. That's an easy fix. I hate using the word easy, but in terms of, like, what's low-hanging fruit, that would be one.
Hard for probably, us, easy for Apple engineers.
Yeah. If AI and Dingus higher Dingus integration was going to be one of the things, obviously that has to be an improvement in Vision OS as well. The other thing that I can think of is much more modifiers or some kind of more ways to take advantage of ARKit's hand gesture recognition, like actual modifiers that just says, I want to pinch the zoom, I want to do that in 3D space, and I want Apple to handle all that. Mechanic for me, like some kind of easy way to utilize like very generic gestures, and maybe even take advantage of different paradigms, like how do I map a Swift UI view and anchor it to my hand. And better integrations with other 3D game engines. So they're going to have to open up the floodgates, do a mea culpa with Unreal, or even have a, you know, a partnership with Godot, some kind of popular game engine that is the counterbalance to whatever's going on with Unity, because Unity is
Unity kind of messed up there with their with their licensing kerfuffle there.
Yeah,
a lot of goodwill was destroyed.
Having reread or had watched a recent video about what exactly does that entail, it's not as terrible as I made it sound, but it also gives me pause of whether or not I can trust them in the future without them having the same type of like poop the bed moment.
It still has, and we're not going to go on the whole tangent, but it's true though that you still need to have a paid, like a pro account or something with Unity, right? Like you have to pay thousands of dollars a year, I believe. Uh-huh.
Just to do it, $40,
$1,000 something, which is a lot of money for hobbyists. And you're right. I think either Apple has to have better tools for hobbyists to use the native tools to build that kind of thing, or they need, as you said, like something like Godot or some other partnership, because I feel like Apple always wants to have a story for the hobbyist indie developer. You're not forced to buy a third party, you know, into a third party ecosystem.
Sure.
You know, in order to do it. So I don't know. We'll see. Maybe they don't care. Because Apple, Apple always claims they care about games and stuff, but I don't believe them. I feel like they make a lot of grandiose statements, but never really follow through.
Well, the funny thing is, like, games is like a high value product on their App Store, right? Like, it's still like if you go
it is, but
the
not
App Store
the,
right
it's,
now,
it's,
it is the second tab from the left.
It is, but it's not like the type of games that they advertise at DubDub or the technology. Like, look at how amazing these graphics can be, and we can do ray tracing. It's like nobody cares. The games are making a lot of money and do not need that stuff.
How is Monopoly Go the third most popular
game? Monopoly. Nobody cares. No. Nobody needs ray tracing in Monopoly. It'll look cool if the little top hat can have light reflecting off it or whatever.
What are we playing? I'm not looking at the top.
But games. It's not necessary.
Sorry.
Anyway, we're not going to go into any more about WWDC news, but it is going to be exciting. We're looking at the AI stuff, looking at Vision OS specifically. I'm also curious to see what they're going to do with some of the technology I released last year, like Swift Data.
Speaking of Vision OS, a little bit of a side tangent of whatever the core thing we're talking about.
That's what we do. Our tagline should be Side Project Spotlight, a story of tangents.
Tangents on tangents. Like tangents within your tangents.
The meme comes up. Oh my god, that's such a dated meme too. We're so old.
My goodness. But I have been messing with Reality Composer Pro a lot, and it's kind of funny because it's actually, I feel like it should be like the inverse, because like a Reality Composer had at least ways for you to add events and configurations to like set up like action items, and you can actually see them in real time of how they would work. And Reality Composer Pro is like, we're going to take those all away.
there is a Reality Composer. I think it's like an iOS thing to view it.
That's gone. That's no longer a thing. Like you can't. I don't think you can download that at all. I could be wrong, but let me check.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, let me check.
I thought it was on the developer tools. Yeah, they have Reality Composer on the App Store, it says, and they have Reality Converter, they have Xcode.
All right, so Reality Composer used to be a Mac app, and I don't see it anywhere.
No, it's part of Xcode now, right?
Yes, but that's Reality Composer Pro.
Yeah, but there's a thing called Reality. This is where it's very confusing. There's a thing called Reality Composer, no Pro, that is just on apparently on the App Store. Like if I,
it's on the Mac. I'm sorry, it's on the iPhone and the iPad. So I don't know if they still have those ways you can trigger events or like not like set up events to be triggered so then we can programmatically trigger them. Reality Composer is available on the App Store for iOS and iPadOS. Okay, that's weird that they don't have the Reality Composer Pro. Anyway, so the point I was trying to like. I was getting comfortable with like basically what you use Reality Composer for is like to compose and construct your 3D assets. So you would take any 3D objects like an OBJ file, maybe you convert into a, what they call a USDZ file, which is like a zipped USD format that was by Pixar. Think of it like a PNG of 3D file formats.
Cool.
Is that a good way to describe it? Maybe.
Sure.
I guess for now. Yeah, I'm sure there's a better analogy here, but for now, think of it like the PNG of 3D formats, because it allows you what it is basically a 3D scene. So you have lighting, you can set up your lighting, your camera, like all the generic stuff that you normally would set up in a 3D scene. So you can do materials, and you know, you can do all sorts of things that you can construct and put it in the USDZ file, and then in Reality Composer you can kind of add particle effects, sound, audio tracks, and sort of construct your scene in a further thing, for which then it can be directly accessed into I guess the popular way to do it is like create a Reality Kit content bundle, which is kind of, it's just a glorified package with a reality Composer Pro project file in there. It's basically where you store your Reality Kit project, which we can get into, like, now we're not, we're back into storyboard days, baby. You thought you got away from that.
No.
We're bringing it back.
Now it's in 3D.
Now it's in 3D.
That's good. We're back now in 3D.
Now in 3D. So get comfortable with your Git projects. And you get merged. You got to get wrecked.
Get wrecked. Get merged and get wrecked. Oh, geez.
There's your podcast title.
Get merged and get wrecked. Nice.
But the cool thing is that once you've set it up, accessing your 3D models and or your 3D scenes can be done in SwiftUI either through Reality Kit View or Reality View. I think it's Reality View. For which then you just call your scene and then you instantly get your 3D models and particle effects, and you can trigger events off of the programmatically. There's also something called a Model 3D view, or Model 3D, I think it's a view, basically a SwiftUI view that you can access and directly access specific models if you needed to or if you wanted to. Yeah, so it's fun. Yeah, it's a lot of fun, I have to say.
So Reality Composer Pro,
it's a little while to get used to, but
less useful than it was. Reality Composer Pro, less useful than it was, but still solves some of the issues you'd have bringing 3D assets in. Like, it's you're still going to use it. But.
I'm trying to, like, so far I've been doing, like, ridiculously weird things with it. So, like, I've added, like, rain effects on top of, like, 3D models. I'm doing, like, rotations.
You just can't do actions. That's what they took out. That's the only
they
main
took
thing.
Those out, but I think
that's in the code now.
You replace it with, like, you can add components for which then you can add ways to interact with each of these 3D models directly in code, and then you programmatically, like, you press a button.
Apple is, they've been moving towards putting everything in code for, you know, you can see that now with starting with Swift UI. Swift data is core data, but all in code, you know, like, they're trying to get rid of, you know, things like separate files.
That's the thing that I find that that's the one thing I don't think Apple, and when we talk about why people say Apple doesn't get games, they don't get game development. Because with game developments, you really need to get like real-time feedback of the changes you make. So the beauty about Unity and any of these game engines is that you have a viewport that you can kind of see the game in sort of like a very basic level, like your scene, game scene in a very basic level, and you can kind of like tweak parameters. So you highlight a model, and maybe you set it into play mode, and then like you tweak the physics, or you tweak the mass of the character, so you see it bounce a little differently, or it reacts a little differently. You have an animation loop of a character running. You testing whether how well it goes left or right, and you can kind of see it real time and tweak the speed of the character as a, you know, so it doesn't look like he's sliding, you know, like stuff like that. You need, you can't keep doing a build and run. You need like a hot reload, basically.
Yeah, there's no Apple provided story for that, right?
I mean, you there is in like Reality Composer Pro, but it's not. It's hard to do like a fully fleshed out. I mean, if there was another wish list thing, I was like, I want a fully fleshed out Reality Composer game engine, basically.
Like which, a unit, like compete with Unity level game engine.
Even at a very basic level, that'd be fine. But you know, I don't think they're. I don't know if that's what they want to commit their resources to.
Yeah, I don't know. But Reality Composer Pro, still cool.
Still cool. Yeah.
And so, and something that you're going to use for Vision Pro development. So whereas before, I only thought of it as something for games. Basically.
I'm using it in terms of like, how do I, because it goes back to my, I guess if I was to do a TED talk about Vision OS or like one of those equivalent, like, deep dish, you know, conference type of talks where you're trying to make the compelling case about developing for the Vision OS. One of the key differentiations about Vision OS development is that you're not constrained by the rectangle anymore. You're not constrained by the computer screen of any size, whether it be the phone, the tablet, the PC, whatever, right? You are now, you can remove that. And it's like, wow, what the heck does that even mean? It means your view doesn't, you know, like it should scare the crap out of you from a designer point of view, because now, you know, you're, you know, in a fancy design system's not going to fit.
Right. Now it's like building a video game.
Right. You can morph it into like, you know, small components, large components, 3D models, and they don't all have to be there at the same time. You can press a button and it switches the whole view to be like three windows in one, or you can remorph it into like one 3D object that you're doing, like you're testing like little things about it. Like you can be much, when they say immersive, that's what they're talking about.
Right. And that's where the really innovative Vision Pro stuff is going to come from, not the ports of iPad apps. It's going to be taking advantage of the 3D world that we live in that you can now kind of put your applications in and interact with. And we've only just begun to touch the surface. I don't have a Vision Pro, so I don't know what's currently in the App Store, but
we are literally in the crawl phases of
the
this,
crawling, the, like little babies whole, crawling,
like yes. I mean, I'm sure the Meta people, the people who develop for Meta, is like, we've been doing this for years.
Exactly.
Like,
join
the party. But like, and respectfully,
welcome
yes,
to the party. Pal GIF comes up.
Thanks for the invite. Right. Yep. So like now we sort of have to sort of take what they've already laid the path for and figure out like, okay, like, is this valuable? Does this make sense? And like, because ultimately the Vision Pro, and you and I talked about this, is sort of like a glimpse into what the future of computing can look like.
Yeah, we never get to escape it. It's just constantly on our face, in our point of view, in our ears.
Sure.
Ever present. Always interacting with the world through a computer. It's gonna be great.
Until the battery dies.
then the generation that grows up with the vision glasses then completely loses all ability to function and just like stops wherever they are space and is unable to move.
If we can get to used to battery charging, you know, in a day, every day of our lives, we can get used to battery charging every two hours.
I mean, like it's dystopian in one sense, but in another sense, it has a lot of cool applications once you have computing as something that you are kind of directly manipulating in your 3D space. There's just more stuff you can do, like more visualizations that are useful, more types of interactions, more types of software experiences. I mean, the common ones, we've always talked about, like, you know, navigation, you know, anything you want a heads up display type of thing for, or overlaying on reality in order to add more context, obviously games or 3D designing any actual real world objects. Now it could theoretically be a much better experience. when you're designing, like if you design some physical thing, but actually see it in, interact with it in space instead of just through a screen. You know, there's a lot of good use cases. Just we haven't seen much yet, right? Because it's still new.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, how many 3D artists or developers?
Yeah. Is your time? This is your time, game devs. All the game developers are losing their jobs right now, right?
Yeah.
Right. A lot of layoffs. It's like, you know, Vision Pro, man. Take a gamble. Maybe you'll be able to be the next app thousandaire over here. Yeah. He's like, yeah, you know, yeah, I'm sorry, guys. App stores don't really make as much money as they used to.
But I mean, there is potentially, like Procreate was sort of the killer app for the iPad.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to think of the word. Like, what's the killer app for Vision Pro? We haven't seen one yet, right? Unless you've seen something. That dinosaur demo is a close thing for me, but I only had the one 30-minute demo.
But like you said, that was a killer app, right? I think one of the things that I think will be an interesting story to tell is like if I could create an asset, 3D asset in that space, right? Just to construct and sculpt one in 3D space in that world.
Oh, right? Wow. We could.
That would be amazing.
How about an app where you and I can then recreate that scene from Ghost where we're molding clay?
You want to mold it together?
Yeah, we can mold it together.
This is not virtually. That type of podcast.
No, maybe not. Maybe not. We'll save that for
You know what would be hilarious? If you show up in my screen as like the ghost, like a ghost first version of yourself.
Yeah. I was just thinking of Patrick Swayze recently because I watched both the Roadhouse movies, the good old one and the bad new one. And I was just thinking of him. I was like, he was in Ghost. I remember that.
Yeah, that's what you can do. If we could figure out a way to actually give you legs,
call it the Patrick Swayze
and like take your persona,
yeah,
and then like give your persona legs, right? And then we can just
we're so on tangent. That was a thing in the which review of the Vision Pro that I see recently where it was one I put in the Slack, and one part of it he's like, he gets distracted because his persona doesn't have legs, but he in the Vision Pro, it doesn't show his legs, but he can feel his legs.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's really funny.
They don't even have arms.
But they should. Well, what's weird, because like you turn on immersion mode, it becomes really blatantly obvious when you turn on immersion mode, and then you stretch your arms out in front of you.
Yeah.
And then you look down and there's just nothing there.
That's what he was doing. There was nothing there. And yet you could grab your legs and you could show your hands grabbing nothing, you know, like that kind of thing, which I didn't know that was actually how it worked. I didn't know it didn't show your legs in immersion mode.
No, it doesn't at all.
It's, I never looked down when I was in my demo.
It doesn't include your legs. I assume because it just, you know, it's just an R1 chip. Well. So, you know.
Now that we're like more than halfway through the episode, let's get to the main topic. let's segue. What are we? What were we supposed to be talking about today?
Something about 9 to 5.
Oh, right. So last time, this all kind of is related because we're going to talk a little bit about for the last half of this episode, kind of a continuation of last week. We were talking about like going indie kind of things, and we touched on like we're all basically 9 to 5 workers now. We thought maybe interesting to talk a little bit more about the 9 to 5 lifestyle, and that can go a lot of different ways. So we decided before we recorded that we're just kind of go anecdotal style, I guess. Mm-hmm. Cultero, you are 9 to 5 for a little while now, and. Sure.
And when we say 9 to 5, we're talking like full time, not as a contractor. So that comes with it all the benefits of, you know, benefits basically. The thing that makes it interesting is because you do this as your full time 9 to 5, you know, the motivation to keep Xcode open after your 9 to 5 reduces dramatically.
For a lot of people. Like, how do you do a side project when you're doing 9 to 5? It's basically what today is about because it's side project spotlight.
I'm still trying to figure that out.
Right. So we have some tips, though. We got some tips today.
You're freshly in the wonderful 9 to 5 lifestyle. How are you liking it so far?
Well, I don't know. I'll get back to you.
What were you before? I thought you were working like a 9 to. I thought you were at a regular schedule before.
But I was a contractor.
Do you have to go in the office now? Has anything changed? Or
yes, I do.
So you have a, do you have a desk, or is it like a floating thing?
Yes, that was a process. I'll tell you about.
So you have your own desk now?
I haven't seen it yet. But
oh, nice. Yeah, I used to have a desk, and then I got a photo from my manager, and it was just pallets of stuff was there now.
It took
our desk
away. It's not like a cube. Let's just put it that.
I used to have a cube.
I mean, it's technically a desk. Yes.
Wait, is it like you guys have just like a desk in the middle of a room or something like Facebook style?
Oh, God. Basically,
it's like my worst nightmare. That's literally my worst nightmare. Not even a cube. I used to have a cube. At least the cube gave me the illusion of having walls.
Well, the cube was kind of funny because before my current job, when I was working my first real job, my real full time job, it was a web development job, and it was like. If you remember Office Space,
or yes,
was that the movie Office Space?
Office Space.
Do you remember all the weird gray, like blah cubicle lifestyle that they were?
That was my.
That
cube.
Was literally. It was a that gray. Was that was literally my cube.
Oh wow, my cube was a gray cube in a basement, so it was even better.
and it was pretty funny because like there was a period where we. Actually didn't do that because we were sort of in transition and we kind of like had these sort of like half cubicles, you know, the ones where you can't see each other until you like stand up a little bit or like
it's not a full height
but
thing.
It's not a full height thing, but I that was kind of the more enjoyable experience because you can like turn around and be like, hey, look at this.
See, you like that. I hated the whole being in an office thing with cubicles. I hated it. The less cubicle there was between me and some other person, the worse it was. Like an open floor plan is my nightmare.
The problem is with it, is that it's hard to get really good, deep focus work done. I mean, even with the cubicles, it was hard.
Yeah, exactly.
But at least you could like isolate to like focus, at least try to.
Yeah.
I think the tough part with me is like the 9 to 5 when I come into the office versus like working from home. Working from home, at least you can say, okay, like you can block the time off. I mean, yeah, you have meetings, but like a lot of times you can say, you know what, like shut everything out, focus and get the work done. And in a work environment, somebody's always going to walk by and be like, hey, you know, chat about whatever, right? And it could be very useful and it could be very relevant, but you just know that that's going to happen. Like you can't like zone in and get real work done because... you inevitably get dragged into something.
So there's this 9 to 5 lifestyle with the half cubes and whatever the heck environment you're on. Is it that it's draining or something? As you said, it's hard to focus on things afterwards, or is it unrelated to that? It's just more related to you're just working all day, so now you got to do more work.
I don't know. You want to go, Aaron? Or well, I guess you haven't really done like an office like
what's sapping your motivation? What's like for me, it was always. The commute and like the being in an office thing.
The commute would be one for sure.
Yeah.
So because it's a combination of mental and physical. So you mentally have you wake up, you take a shower or whatever, you know clean
hopefully.
Up, you clean your face.
If you
or whatever,
care about
right?
your Brush coworkers your at all, take a shower.
Yeah, you take a shower or whatever, right? And then but it takes you a while to get. Takes maybe like 15-30 minutes,
gotta,
right? To get
gotta make sure you brush
get
your teeth,
up, get up
man.
And get out. Yeah, brush your teeth,
oral
floss,
hygiene
all that.
Important.
Yeah, that's
eat
very
healthy
important,
breakfast,
especially if you're in lots of meetings.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And then you know, obviously, you want to think about some breakfast. Either you get it here, you go to the office, or
get it
somewhere.
That was something I used to do, and was not healthy. I used to eat too much, like a food truck or something on the way in.
Well, you want to at least get something that good substance, but. In any case.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, you got all the morning ritual stuff you got to do, and then you got to go on, like, the travel time, however it is.
So travel time could be anywhere from, like, 30 minutes to an hour. Some people even an hour and 30 minutes, right? So, like,
if you take SEPTA, it's just an undetermined roll of the dice every morning. You're like, am I even going to make it to work today before lunch?
You know,
who knows?
I'm pleasantly surprised sometimes, but I don't take regional line, so I can't
speak to that. I used
experience.
To take the regional line. It was just like, okay, today I'm going to get in it like this time, I guess.
It's actually kind of interesting because like depending on which one you get on, like, you could either get there exceptionally early or arguably on time.
My favorite thing is when the regional railway, this is all very Philly specific and like pre-pandemic for me, so I don't know how it's like now, but sometimes I would go down there and the train would just stop before the end of the line, the stop. Like, it would stop right before my stop. Like, literally physically stop moving. And it would just stay there for like 10 minutes because everything else was behind schedule, so it had to wait for other trains to go by. Oh, my God. So frustrating. You're like, I can see my destination. It's right there. So, hey, commuting problems can be very draining both directions.
Both directions.
So you go to work, and maybe you're like me, and you also hate the cubicle life, but maybe you love it. But you go to work, and you're not always coming home energized, is, I guess, what we're saying, for various reasons.
Well, you have other obligations, right? You have to get dinner. Maybe there's some chores you have to do, laundry, vacuum cleaning, blah, blah, blah. You're just not in. Then you have to think about, oh, I have to open up my computer, turn on, and then, like, get into the mode, right? Get into that, like, you know, assuming that you're doing something with programming. If you're doing art or even like that, then you have to worry about context switching, right? Ultimately, it's context switching.
We're doing this now after work today. Yeah, it's like normally we do this on a weekend for a reason.
And so I think that's where sort of trying to figure out the proper time to do it. And of course, you know, if you have family and you have kids, like, that all, like, throw your side projects out the window at that point.
So how do you balance all this stuff and actually get something done? Aaron.
don't ask me. I have no idea.
So when we say side projects, sometimes in our mind, we talk about it from a programmer's point of view. Sort of like, if I'm messing around, sometimes I will mess around with Vision OS related stuff because I think I need to get good faster. So I actually will dedicate some time to building things. Sometimes it's even work related, but I'll at least try to build something that is that I'll find useful that I can take to work maybe next time.
I mean, I was doing the similar thing last, you know, many months this year with everything from like latest SwiftUI stuff to Swift data, things like that. And then also I'll spend time research, like if there's a dub videos or some other like talks or books or research articles or something I need to read.
Yeah.
And then it's a lot of stuff to try to fit in a small amount of time.
I mean, to be fair, I will go down some horrible YouTube rabbit holes during that period of time. So like sometimes like a side project intention will turn into like, oh, this is a cute cat video.
Yeah. So concrete tips here. Let's give some people some concrete tips on how to deal with those. We've explained, and I think everybody knows if they have a regular job, that it's tough. There's very many things from your schedule to your commute to the competing interests for your limited amount of time after work. How do you actually get anything done? Because you can't, because you do have a limited amount of time and energy.
Aaron, you've got the answer. I know it.
Aaron does have the answer.
No, I don't. I mean, other than like, oh, I need to get a workout done. Other than that,
well, that is
that's one of the things.
The best I can do after work.
Okay, fine. I have
that's more than me. I don't even get one workout then. My workout is my walk home.
Well, so I still work from home. I did my workout this morning. I love doing that in the morning. But I have concrete tips.
Okay.
Because I have been in the situation for a long time where I've tried to do things after work and I've had limited success, or I'll get burned out quickly. I'll make progress for a while, then I'll get completely burned out because I'm burning the candle on both ends, and then you just give up, or you get easily distracted by something else. So I would say tip number one is you need to kind of ruthlessly prioritize. Like, you need to decide what is the most important, like, thing or couple things in your life outside your day job. Because essentially the way I see it, everything outside your day job is a side project, you know, because if you think about the amount of time you're spending the majority of your time during the week at your regular job, especially when you start taking into commute and everything. So, like, you need to be ruthless. Like, what are my priorities? And I've talked about before, but I have been finding some more success going with the Max Sparky's productivity course. And I think if I had to, like, boil it down to a nutshell, the one thing you have to do is you have to figure out, like, what... Like, in his case, he has, like, what roles I have in my life. So I look at, like, I have roles in my life. Like, I have, like, important relationships, or I have, like, the Philly Coca is one of the things that's, like, a role in my life, like, the stuff we're doing for that. And so I have a bunch of them up here, and they're very, you know, whatever, they're different for everybody. And I actually do various levels of planning in order to try to use my time efficiently. So I do quarterly planning, which I have to do start after this podcast because when we're recording this. But I do quarterly planning, and he has a whole process for that where I basically go through like the different areas of my life that I'm prioritizing here. And, you know, like I have a script here, like there's questions that I'll answer. And then I go through the roles and I say, like, you know, how did I do last quarter? What do I want to do in the next 90 days? That kind of thing. And you just kind of you write it all down. The important thing is you write it all down in a place you can review. And then after I do this, then I translate it into things like projects and OmniFocus. Or things on my calendar, whatever, so that they're like they're actual things in my to-do system to get to. And I also do like weekly planning. You do that, like I do like on Sundays usually, and then you do some, and then daily, and you know, and I block schedule my week out. And you know, and that's in a nutshell without getting into like the whole all the details in there. That's what you need to do. You need to figure out at a high level, like what are your priorities in life here. What are your priorities for your time outside of work? What is your goal? What is you're trying to do or create? And you gotta be like ruthless. Like I have had to just essentially drop for the most part my photography hobby, because one of the things that for years I've tried to balance both of them, and I just can't. It takes too much time to do programming stuff and the photography stuff the way I do it right now. So I wrote in my like quarterly plan, like at the beginning of last quarter, I was like, I can't do any of this stuff like right now. So I basically have just, I'm not going out photographing stuff as much as I was before. I'm just not doing it, like, except for things that like with Chrissy, her business, I'll do some stuff with like her dance studio because she's a high priority like for me. So I'll do that. But otherwise I just drop that stuff and I'm trying to carve out time for the side project, in this case specifically app development. So then I'm like, okay, how do I plan that? And then I'm specifically using like a GitHub projects to lay out with someone else, like what are things we're trying to do. Like we have to have website stuff done, privacy policy stuff, that kind of thing. We also have to get the app built and it has to have certain features. And then it's just kind of I put the stuff in there and I track it on little Kanban boards and I, you know, it's a little loosey goosey there because we're not going through some kind of special process. But I meet up with him every week, the partner I'm working on this with, in order to kind of go over where we are and go over the tickets that we have in there and what we're trying to do. And as I said, I block out my time. I do that in the day job now too, but I block out my time in the evening. So I think that's probably the most important thing you could do. Once you figure out what it is that you want to do, what your goal is, look at the calendar and realize literally how much time you have or don't have. It's not much. Even if you had all day long, it's really easy for you to fritter time. Like you do not have that much time in life in general. If you think about it, you start breaking it down by like number of weeks, you know, like if to be like grim about it, like total number of weeks in life is actually not as big as people might think it is. You just do the math. So when you look at like a quarter and then a month and then a week and then a day, like how many hours do I actually have? Not many. So you start blocking them out on a calendar. And that's like, to me, my calendar is a concrete promise to myself. This is what I'm doing. And so when I put a block schedule down for myself, I treat it the same priority I would like a meeting with somebody else. It's like, I'm going to do this. And when you do that though, it forces you to make decisions, just like having a good budget will force you to make decisions, because you'll see in hard numbers, you'll see in like little blocks on your calendar, like this is how much time I have. And of course, you have to be realistic about it. You can't be like, you block out every single moment of your week and expect it all to go smoothly. You know, I block it out with buffer time. You know, I block it out with like, you're not going to accomplish like four big things in the evening, like maybe one. And, you know, and if you get thing done early and you have enough time to do something else, you have the energy, then maybe you'll do something else. You have to be flexible about it. But I try to pick on I try to look at my calendar and say, what is like the one or two things I really want to do this week get done? I block out the time. And then as to like how you do the nitty gritty of like your to do management and your Kanban boards or whatever, like that's kind of up to you. There's lots of different things at work and I tried lots of different things. My go to is OmniFocus for basically my whole life outside of the day job. And for this particular project, I'm trying out GitHub projects just because it was free and available and it's fine. I have issues with it, but it works fine. Two people.
I mean, GitHub projects is one of those hidden gems that, I mean, it's not as fluid as I would think. Like,
I know I hit rough patches. Trello is nice.
Because it's so stuck to it sticks its relationship to the issues.
Yeah, yeah.
Like its core mechanic. But
it's free. It's there. Yeah, it works.
It's fine.
And it's like, especially if you're doing something with GitHub code.
So far it's better than reminders, and I want reminders to be that replacement, but at the way it's currently constructed, it's not that great.
But I mean, as I said, I mean, in a nutshell, you have to, in order to get to do a side project, you have to, you know, pick something. You have to have an idea of what it is, and then you have to, like, you have to plan and literally carve out the time. Yeah. And my suggestion is to essentially do block schedules, schedule it on your calendar.
It's so funny to hear when you say that, because it reminds me a lot of how there are a lot of companies that will have. That will plan scrums or plan their sprints, I'm sorry, one quarter before the next quarter. I was just like, wow, that's you're doing like a yearly thing.
I'm doing what is
quarterly
that book?
And yearly.
What is that book? So 4,000 Weeks is the book that I was reading. That is... The concept, even just the concept alone, is pretty eye opening. You've never read that or heard about it before.
4,000 weeks.
Yeah, 4,000 weeks. So
we're having in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll put in the show notes. But like 4,000 weeks is what is it like? It's a it's like the amount of time, like if you live till 80, I think. Okay. Like that would be how many weeks you have. So if you think about like your age now and like, you know, maybe what you expect to live and assume you're going to be healthy and everything to that, and you break it down into number of weeks, there's only like 52 weeks in a year. You know, there's how many weeks are in a quarter? Like 12 to 15 or something, depends, like, right?
Sure.
It's not a lot of weeks. Maybe. So it's like you start thinking about, if you break things out by week, you very quickly are like, holy crap. And when you're talking about a side project and how much time it takes to build these things and software or whatever, yeah, I mean, it can be demoralizing on one hand because you're like, there's just not much time. On the other hand, it forces you to make choices, and then it forces you to like whittle down whatever you want to work on as a side project to something you can actually get done in that time, because the work will always fill the amount of time you give it. That's another truism.
Yeah, I think one of the funny things is I remember there was always this conversation about how to sort of be focused and, you know, I don't know how to describe it, but basically, like, it goes back to, like, I remember my mom, who would be very good about completing like 10 tasks in one day that I would, like,
wow,
for me it would be like, oh geez, that would be the whole week. And for her it was like one day. So like the ability to just focus on the task and then just like commit to like getting every one of them done within that time frame was like one of those special abilities that very few people have, in my mind.
Well, I mean, that's why I think you need to,
including myself.
Well, that's why you have to. That's why we have these systems and tools and techniques to prioritize, and then then you have to generate the habit, I guess. So you can put stuff on your calendar and everything, but you have to actually respect that. That you're doing that, or whatever technique you're using. So I don't know if it's a superpower. I mean, some people maybe are just naturally good at saying, I have these tasks to do, I'm just going to do it. Other people, it's hard to get motivated. So to get motivation, you know, that's difficult. It's very personal. It's like, how important is it you're doing? Like, if you're doing something because you want to improve your career, or you're doing something because you have this idea you just need to get out of you and create something. Like, whatever it is, the reasons you have for doing it, that's part of the process of envisioning like what your side project is. And then the motivation is a very personal thing. All these techniques and stuff I have is mostly just to help me to keep track of it, because one thing that will demotivate me is just not having any idea what to do. You know, like, that's one thing that can demotivate you. So at least I'm removing that obstacle. But the fundamental motivation is, I don't know, it's still hard. It's very personal. It kind of depends on what it is you're trying to accomplish. You know, but I find that what's motivating me lately is thinking about how little time there is. And, like, if I want something done, I have to do it now, you know? But at the same time, I have to make sure that I am not burning myself out. So I'm also focused on proper sleep. Trying to get a good sleeping.
What's your planned sleep schedule from now on?
Well,
because I assume there's consistency is required here.
Yeah, so I'm trying to get it consistent. So it hasn't been consistent for a long time. I have a difficult time falling asleep, so I'm trying different things. I found that obviously cutting back on caffeine. I use Dingus on my HomePod to play white noise. That kind of helps me at night a little bit. Because other people try different things. Some people will, like, listen to some podcast or watch like a YouTube, like a show on Netflix is not that interesting and then fall asleep. I've tried those things. They don't work for me. I get too invested.
Feel like the light source is part of the problem, right? Like, you want to, like, make it as sure dark, it's dark as possible.
Yeah. I'm trying to go to bed at the same time. And, you know, I use like the Apple tools for this too. I use the health app. I set up a bedtime, whatever, sleep schedule, and then it gives you an alert that says, oh, it's time for you to wind down. And if, you know, when I follow it helps.
Like, are you in bed, not to get too personal, but are you in bed like before 10, or are you because usually, like, there's like, I assume there's like that REM sleep thing, right? So you want to get in bed early to get your rhythm. You're I guess there's like a concentrated period of time between like what I'm sure I'm butchering it, but something like 10 to 12 to 2 or something, right? Like the optimal time frame for when to get the best sleep, and then everything else is like bonus, right? And then so like you want to get in earlier than say midnight, but then not, you know, maybe you don't feel like getting that early, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to move my wake up time earlier. Like the goal would be like right now it's like 7. I would prefer it to be like 6 or 6:30 or something, like really early if I can, but that's tough my default sleeping bedtime is like 1 a.m. or whatever. If I track the data with my Apple Watch, and then I use like Sleep Plus, you know, and I can look at it. And if I look at the data, it says that I basically don't fall asleep till after 1 a.m. most times that I'm getting. And it's like, that's not working out well. So my problem is it says falling asleep. And then I try the white noise thing. And I try a consistent bedtime and cutting back on the caffeine during the day. And I mean, some of this is just personal, you know, issues. If you have trouble sleeping, whatever it is, you have to identify and fix it. But getting on a sleep schedule and getting up at the same time every day is, and I'm like inching towards the goal of being really consistent about it. That is very helpful for you in life, because, you know, you what really sucks is when I wake up, I'm tired because I didn't get enough sleep, or if I don't wake up on schedule and, I oversleep or something. And then, you know, it's like you're not getting a good start on your day. You're not getting your stuff done. Like if you have to commute or whatever, that's annoying. When I used to commute downtown, that was the thing that made me get up on time. And so except that it would also be terrible, because it was like I had to get up so much earlier than work started, which means like when I was commuting every day, if I had trouble getting to sleep, there was no opportunity to like sleep in an extra hour or something, because I had to go catch a train, because I had to get up to get the train so early anyway. But if I work at home, as work starts a certain time, and I'm trying to get up well in advance of that, so there's a little bit of buffer room if it's a bad night. But, you know, consistent sleep pattern helps, I think, a lot. The more consistent I've been lately, the healthier I felt, and better I felt, and more energy I had to do side project stuff in the evening.
I don't know. What is your sleep schedule like, Aaron? Is it erratic, or is it erratic for you, Aaron, or is it consistent? You're like the athlete on our team.
No, it definitely helps when I get exercised.
Yes.
If I don't, then I can't sleep.
That's actually true. Oh. I've been doing more exercise, and that really does help.
Wait, so you exercise before you go to sleep, or you exercise
not
way
too
before?
Soon before, but It's like if I just like don't exercise at all for a day, then I'm just like, oh
yeah,
I have like too much energy and I can't sleep.
Right. Is that weights or is that like is that cardio that we're in that sense? And is it like in the morning or
cardio stuff? But that's all depends on what you're trying to do.
And that's in the evening or in the morning? Because I've always heard like if you do it in the morning, that helps rev your engine up. That's one of the key things of revving your engine up to get you in the mode of waking up early or being.
Yeah, it's
better
hard
for you in the morning.
Yeah,
it's hard in the morning
if you can do it. If you can get up that early, but usually
I
end up.
I did it this morning, but I lifted weights this morning and then I was sore and,
right.
and tired.
If you do the wrong thing too early and then you're just exhausted the rest of the day.
I was tired already because I didn't sleep well. Apparently I thought I was fine last night. I went to bed on time, but then I woke up tired and I look at my data in the app and I'm like, what the hell happened? I didn't sleep well at all. I was like tossing and turning all night. And so I woke up a little tired and then I did the workout and then I was like really tired. So it kind of backfired a little bit at first, but then I felt better. You know, took a shower.
The saddest thing is like the best sleep I've ever had in my life, or at least the way I felt it was when I was like a school night. And long story short, without getting into too much details, I drank like half a bottle of cognac.
Oh, wow. That helps you sleep.
And I was like, when I was going to bed, I was like, obviously I was pretty wasted at that point, but I was just like, I don't know what I'm going to, I don't even know how I'm going to wake up tomorrow. This is brutal. And I go to bed and I wake up and I've never felt so refreshed in my entire life.
Wow. That's like the opposite of alcohol with any normal person. Normally I try not to drink at night because the alcohol, it disrupts my sleeping pattern.
I don't know how to describe it. It was like you wake up
blackout drunk and got really refreshed. Like
you feel like
for 20 hours or something.
Yeah, I know.
No,
how many hours?
This was like midnight or like 1 a.m. or 2 a.m.
Were you like 20?
I can't disclose. Okay.
You're pretty young. You're pretty young though.
Very young. Let's just say that.
Yeah, maybe when you're younger it works. I mean, one of the things is avoiding caffeine and avoiding alcohol helps. I know this is like the old man podcast today.
I'm pretty sure this was like 2 a.m. in the morning, and I went to bed. And I was like, oh, I'm screwed.
When did you get up? Like 6, 7?
Yeah, I had to go to school. So like 6 a.m. in the morning. I'm like, oh, I'm all right.
I don't know. It helps if you're young. That helps too. Energy. That's the other thing. I mean, it's part of time. As you get older, it gets harder to do everything. It's harder. I mean, you have more commitments, more issues. You have family problems, stuff maybe. But just getting enough sleep and getting exercise, recovering from, you know, like being able to deal with sleep deprivation, just gets harder over time. You know, because you're when you're young, it's you know, just with like with most things, your body is a little more resilient. So, you know, you gotta be a little bit more. You gotta use wisdom as you get older to offset the lack of, I guess, built-in freshness. Being younger, freshness.
Sure. Well,
wrong word, but I can't think of a proper word right now. Aaron just crack it up. That's the goal. Crack Aaron up. I was fresh, and then I got older. Now I'm just like a rotting corpse.
Oh my goodness!
Ooh,
we're not there yet.
We're not there yet. Right. No, we're still pretty young.
Yeah,
ish. Ish.
Speaking of knowing when to quit early, we should
wrap this up. So hopefully though, people got something useful out of my tips there and my ramblings about time running out. And
yeah, I need to read that book.
Slack them and post the notes.
Yeah, post the notes.
That's all we have for today. You can learn more about Philly Coco at phillycoco.org. There you'll find links to our Slack group, meetup schedule, and contact info. If you're feeling generous, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your podcast platform of choice is, and share us with all your developer friends. And one more thing. I don't actually have one more thing, so I'm just going to promote azamsharp.school.
Nice. Not a sponsor.
Promotion. He is currently having two workshops that you can sign up for $50, which is a steal. Swift data or data, depending on where you're from. Fundamentals. April 6th at 11 a.m. To 2 p.m. Central Time. Looks like it's a very good way to get into understanding how Swift data works in conjunction with CloudKit. So actually, that's probably a really nice one. I probably should consider that one.
I watched one of his, I don't know if it came from this. I watched a video he posted on YouTube. Mm-hmm. I think it was YouTube recently about that. Because I was like, I was looking to do Swift data with CloudKit. Apparently, it's very straightforward. But I when I have a question about how to use a framework like that, I actually do go to Asm's resources first. He's not actually sponsoring the podcast, YouTube.
Not at all. He actually even has something, a section there for testing. And you know how I feel about testing. But you know something? Maybe it's because I don't understand the fundamentals of testing.
Yeah, he has some great stuff on testing.
Amazingly enough, he also has an introduction to testing in iOS using Swift.
Oh my God, ooh, I should read that.
Did you like that? That's on April 27th. At 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Central Time, and that is also $50. It talks about he's going to talk about unit testing, mocking, integration testing, and end-to-end testing. I mean,
nice.
If you want to learn how to test because somehow you're masochistic about your life,
I was actually just thinking today I need to write some tests around this code I was running today. I literally was like, wrote my notes. I wrote my notes today at the end of the day. I was like, need to write some tests because this is complicated. I was like, this is kind of complicated. Need to write some tests.
I swear. I'm too much when it comes to that thing. Anyway, but yes, again, asmsharp.school is the website to go to. And yeah, shout out to you, Asm Muhammad.
Yes.
All right. Well, till next time. Good luck on your own developer journey. We will cheer for you always.
They don't even have arms.